Welcome to Health Cetera's podcast. In this podcast, Dr. Diana Mason, Senior Policy Service Professor at the Center for Health Policy and Media Engagement at the George Washington University School of Nursing, discusses palliative care, otherwise known as supportive care, which is an area of healthcare many people are unfamiliar with, but has been highlighted by the ongoing COVID-19 pandemic. Dr. William Rosa is a palliative care nurse practitioner and a postdoctoral research fellow at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York City. Today, Dr. Rosa explains what palliative care is, who is eligible to receive palliative care, how to discuss palliative care options with a provider, and the growing benefits of obtaining palliative care, especially for those afflicted by coronavirus. This interview was recorded on March 24th, 2021, as a part of Health Cetera in the Catskills Radio Program on WIOX Radio, and is hosted by Diana Mason.
COVID-19 has highlighted an area of healthcare that many people are unfamiliar with. It's called palliative care. And here to talk about what is palliative care and why it's so important is Dr. William Rosa, a palliative care nurse practitioner and a postdoctoral research fellow at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York City, and a global leader in the palliative care movement. Billy, welcome to Health Cetera in the Catskills.
Hi, Diana. Thanks for having me.
So let's start talking, what is palliative care?
Oh, the question for the ages. So palliative care, and I do want to say for your listeners that they may hear it referred to as supportive care as well. So a lot of teams around the country are changing their name to supportive care to invite some more engagement. But it's really an approach to care that's centered on the needs and the values of patients and their families. And it prioritizes really alleviating the symptoms that may be caused by serious illness, and also improving the quality of life of patients who are confronting serious illness. So we're really there to support not only the patients, but their families, their caregivers, their communities, if it's relevant. But really, really important to note that palliative care can be beneficial at any stage of illness, including those at the end of life. And we really take a holistic approach. So even though a lot of what we do is focused on physical symptoms and symptom management, we're looking at your social support. How do we integrate your cultural needs? How do we attend to your religious and spiritual care needs? And we can even help with legal and ethical dilemmas. So there's really a holistic approach to how we assist.
All right. So in my head, shouldn't all of healthcare be like this?
Yes. And you know,
yeah.
I think that's the downfall, right? Right. This we aim for this person-centered, family-centered, whole person approach to care. That's what we say. That's what we write. But the practice of it is really complex because, you know, there's healthcare workforce shortages. There's resource shortages. Of course, we've seen many of this come up during COVID-19. So sometimes, you know, I really believe that healthcare workers and providers really want to be able to provide that level of care. But sometimes they just can't.
Yeah. So I have to share with you that so hospice care, when I looked at hospice care, care at the end of life, and that model, I on many occasions said that all of healthcare should be like hospice care. It's comprehensive. It supports the family. It does the symptom management, et cetera. Hospice care, I think, because, and correct me if I'm wrong, but because it was associated with dying, when you talked about trying to move that into earlier in the phase of somebody's illness, people rejected it. They saw, if I got a referral to hospital, it means I'm dead. I'm dying. And so what I see from the outside is that palliative care arose to try to move that comprehensive trajectory farther upstream, if you will, and that eventually, hopefully, all of healthcare will be this way. No?
Yeah, I mean, you are 100% on the money with that. So, you know, the hospice movement was what started this holistic approach to symptom management, and it really focused on the end of life. And so, you know, the question that, that clinicians ask themselves are, if this is a would I be surprised if this patient died in the next 6 months? And if the answer is no, I wouldn't be surprised, then this is a patient who's appropriate for hospice. And you're absolutely right that the movement has been, how do we get that further upstream? And not just further upstream, but fully integrated into the healthcare service. And so the question that we typically ask in the healthcare setting is, would I be surprised if this patient died within the next 12 months? And if the answer is no, that's typically a patient who would be appropriate for palliative care. And I think the really sad part, and you hit on a lot of the points, is that the way we practice palliative care in this country and around the world is subpar in many, many settings. And so the way it typically works is, you know, you are diagnosed with a serious illness, let's say cancer, because that's my background, and immediately we begin providing curative treatments. What we mean is, you know, chemotherapy, radiation, surgery possibly, et cetera. And very often at the time of diagnosis, those treatments are very much aligned with a patient's preferences and values, right? They want to fight this cancer. They want to beat this cancer. And what typically happens is that at some point along the illness trajectory, possibly those treatments will no longer elicit the outcomes that we're looking for. And then like a light switch, somebody says, time for palliative care. And then like a light switch, somebody says, time for hospice. And then at the end of life, the relationship ends. But that's not how it's supposed to work. Palliative care is all about relationship. And so ideally, at the time of diagnosis, not only are you getting those curative treatments, that chemotherapy, that radiation, but you're also getting support from a palliative care team. And over time, maybe there are fewer curative treatments available, and the role of palliative care will increase. And we work with a patient as we transition into hospice. And we even are there to support the family beyond the time of death into the bereavement and grief phase. So in the ideal model, we're seeing palliative care that is fully integrated.
But there are a lot of barriers to this, and it's in some ways surprising, and I think it's probably why you're also changing language to supportive care. You can tell me what you think of that. But this became very apparent to me when a family member was very ill, needed to have surgery, and was having trouble getting the clearance for the surgery. And the condition of the patient was such that if they didn't have the surgery, they would lose a limb and probably end up dying. They were going to have surgery one way or another. And so I started to think about, well, this hospital had a very good palliative care program. And I thought, well, why not see about having palliative care come in right now and work with us and help us with there was a lot of pain management and other kinds of symptom management. And just be there to help us through this process. And when I mentioned it to the surgeon, he said, we don't do that. We don't believe in that. And I was shocked. It's like, in his mind, I think he saw it as, okay, we're looking at moving right into and we're at the end of life. And we weren't.
Right.
So what? Talk about some of these barriers that exist to trying to do this work that should be welcomed by everyone.
Well, Diana, let me just first say, I'm really sorry that you and your family member had that experience, because I think it's a disservice to our patients and our families to say things like, we don't believe in that.
Yes.
That's not something that, that blows my mind. And I think we're really missing the mark on what person-centered care means when we say things like that. I don't care what the role is, you know, whether we're a surgeon or a nurse, et cetera. But, you know, I think there are a ton of myths and a ton of misunderstandings about palliative care. And to me, the biggest misunderstanding is that palliative care is something that is reserved for patients who are nearing the end of life or who are dying right now. And it's just not true. And so what I see, and I'm speaking not just as a nurse and as a researcher right now, I'm speaking as a citizen, but I think what's scary to me is that not only does the public largely misunderstand what palliative care is, but a lot of other healthcare workers do too.
Yeah.
Nurses and physicians don't get it.
Yeah.
And it's important for your listeners to know that, you know, palliative care is a specialty service in a lot of settings. So we typically get involved through consultation. So what that means is your primary provider or your specialist, so if you have chronic heart failure, your cardiologist, or if you have cancer, your oncologist, have to approve of our involvement, right? They're the ones that have to pick up the phone and say, hey, can you jump on this case and give me your input? And so I think the unfortunate part for that surgeon in that story you just shared is that as a palliative specialist, my job is not just to provide an extra layer of support to patients and their families, but we provide an extra layer of support to those specialists. We could have supported that surgeon. We could have really managed the complex symptoms that your family member was experiencing. We could have assisted with the really difficult conversations about planning next steps that are often time consuming, and you know that you often don't have time for in a 20-minute appointment with a specialist. And that is our role. So I think the sad part is that we missed out on not only being able to support you and your family member, but also that team, that healthcare team.
Yeah. So, Billy, let me ask you, if I could not have gone to the palliative care team myself and said, I want you to take care of my family member, the family member was on Medicare and they have regular Medicare, not Medicare Advantage. So essentially the person can seek out the services they think they want. And the issue is, will Medicare pay for it? Is it not recognized by Medicare as anything other than a referral service?
You know, I would have to look at palliative care. I know hospice, so hospice is a subset of palliative care where the goals are very much the same. And again, typically reserved for those in the last 6 months of life. Electing hospice is a Medicare benefit.
Yeah.
Right? You are ultimately electing that Medicare benefit. Sometimes the challenge in the community, in hospitals, it's typically easier. As long as you have transparent and authentic communication with your provider or your nurse, and you can say, look, I really want palliative care involved in this team. Let me just see what they can offer us in this situation. Typically, I would say, if your communication is good and if you're educated about what palliative care can offer, there should not be any barriers. The problem comes in the community sometimes where what we're seeing is typically something like in New York, we're seeing visiting nurse service, which is a home hospice service. And so it's labeled hospice. It's certified by Medicare as hospice and not, quote, palliative care that is, like you said, further upstream in the illness.
Oh. So,
hospice, somebody has to come and certify that you have, for example, certain symptoms, certain performance level, certain functionality. And if you qualify for hospice and you are certified by that hospice agency and say you live beyond the next 6 months, which patients do all the time, but you have to be recertified for that benefit every 6 months.
So that service is not available to me unless I say that, because to sign up for hospice, you have to say you're not pursuing curative treatment at this point. Correct.
So that is true. That is largely true. I just want to put a caveat in there that there are some changes in some states being made with certain cancer treatments. I just will put a caveat in there that it is something that if you're concerned about or unsure about, the real key part here is real open communication with that primary provider that you see, whether it's a physician, a nurse practitioner, or a specialist, whoever is really caring for that serious illness. The key there is communication with them, because they're the ones who are going to, and of course the palliative care team, if it's available, are going to be the ones to let you know what you can continue and what you can't.
And not even
what you can and what you can't, but what your insurance will cover.
Yeah. So if I've got a loved one who has end-stage chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD, or end-stage renal disease. Doesn't mean they're dying in the next year, but they have a lot of symptoms, and they are challenged every day with some symptoms, whether it's pain or difficulty breathing or what have you. So if I feel like maybe this would be good for my loved one, you're saying that what I need to do is talk to whoever's managing the care and say, is that can we call in a palliative care team and see if they have some other ideas on the symptom management or other things that we might consider?
I think that is absolutely right. There's a great website called getpalliativecare.org, get palliativecare, all one word, .org, mm-hmm. getpalliativecare.org. And that is sponsored by one of our key advocacy organizations in the country, Center to Advance Palliative Care. And it's really for patients and families, and it can help you, of course, give you more language around palliative care, help you decide if it's a good fit for you. It lists all the illnesses where palliative care might be appropriate, like you mentioned COPD and end-stage renal disease. And then it walks you through steps, talking to your doctor, identifying providers in your area, meeting a palliative care team and really identifying who is on the team and how that works. And, of course, information about insurance. So, if people find themselves in that situation, that's really the key, is having that language and information.
Now, and I'm talking with Dr. William Rosa, nurse practitioner, palliative care nurse practitioner, and a leader in palliative care. So, Billy, the COVID has really shined a light on palliative care because, there's been all this focus on who's going to get the ventilator, and in areas where there's been a surge, there's been some rationing of care one way or another. And not every hospital really was thoughtful about the fact that palliative care is needed for everyone. Talk to us about what you've experienced during COVID, or what you've seen across the country and the world in terms of COVID.
Yeah. I think it's an important question, and it's funny you should ask this question. I just looked at some updated statistics from Johns Hopkins on COVID this morning, actually. So as of this morning, we're talking 124 million COVID cases around the world and 2.7 million deaths. So, I think it's safe to say that we have seen an exponential increase in the visibility of health-related suffering that requires palliative care. And, in other words, if there was ever a time for more palliative care integration and really widespread access to palliative care services, it's now.
Yeah.
And it's going to be for quite some time. So I think, it's important to acknowledge that everybody in healthcare right now is maxed, right? They're maxed on resources. They're maxed on abilities. Hospitals are still struggling with not only physical resources like ventilators, like you mentioned, but human resources, right? Nurses and physicians are reporting that they're more likely to leave the health field. And so what we've heard from a lot of colleagues around the country are a few things. One, we're seeing a lot of what I might refer to as task shifting. That would have a very different definition if we were talking, at a policy level. But we're seeing not enough palliative care teams available mm-hmm. to meet needs. And so we're seeing, for instance, nurses having to be the provider of spiritual care, having to provide more social support and identify social resources than maybe they would have in the past. We're seeing chaplains who are having to play the roles of social workers and the responsibilities of social workers. So we're seeing all of this task sharing and task shifting. That's putting a real strain on the human resources we have at the bedside. And we're also seeing tremendous, tremendous suffering. So, when we think about the ICU and all of the visitor restrictions in hospitals, we see that that patients are dying without their loved ones at the bedside. I don't want to say they're dying alone, because I know nurses and staff are really doing their best to support patients up until the time of death. But they're dying without their loved ones and without the opportunities to say and do the things that are important at that stage of life. But also family members are grieving alone. So we're seeing this kind of in the community, right? And that's going to have long-term mental health implications for families who feel unresolved about their loved one's death. So we're basically seeing this increased need for palliative care, and I think a stretching of the workforce and the abilities we have to provide that, again, holistic level care that, would be ideal. Of course, it would be the care that we want to give.
Yeah, and... So is there any discussion in the palliative care community right now about the long haulers, people with enduring symptoms from COVID and symptom management work for them?
That's a really good question. I think, you know, I'm hearing more, of course, I think that the interesting part of COVID is what we're seeing is not only, it's not just the people with COPD, like you talked about earlier, who are getting COVID and having serious complications. It's people who were healthy at baseline. It's your 24-year-old who runs 6 miles a day. It's your mom of three who's 45 and, you know, running activities in her community. So with no underlying baseline illness. So that's the scary part, I think, about COVID is we're seeing people going from very active, very healthy to hospitalization, severe symptomatology, and acute declines, very quick declines. And so I think for the people who already have serious illness, it's safe to say that those symptoms may become exacerbated over time and, of course, require further palliative care attention. But for a lot of people who are healthy at baseline and are being discharged, with maybe minimal symptoms, I think it really varies, and I think the science is still out on that. You know, I was just a part of a lecture a few weeks ago where we were talking about the long-term potential neurocognitive impacts of COVID-19, where people experience memory loss and other cognitive changes in the hospital setting with COVID, right, in the acute care setting, but nobody really knows what those long-term implications are going to be. And what's going to be required to support that over time. So I think that's kind of a to be determined.
Yeah, and I wonder about my reading is I'm seeing more people talking about people who really had mild symptoms or very few symptoms who are finding some enduring symptoms that are quite bothersome, and it's actually an interesting thing to think about. And we're not going to be able to get into this, but I just want to acknowledge that you're doing some amazing work globally to try to get this idea of palliative care being something that all healthcare providers provide at some level, sort of fundamental level, still having the palliative care specialist to call upon, that all of us need sort of this basic framework and basic skills, fundamental skills in palliative care. You're doing some really great work, Billy, including, you know, globally as well as in this country. And So the resource that this getpalliativecare.org, is that the best resource for people to learn more about palliative care?
Yes, definitely, getpalliativecare.org. And I really encourage people to educate themselves with language, with background, because all of us will either need palliative care at some point or know someone who needs it. And it will give us the language and the resources we need to be able to support ourselves and our loved ones.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming on to Health Center in the Catskills today, Billy, and talking about this. I've been talking with Dr. William Rosa, a palliative care nurse practitioner, a postdoctoral research fellow at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York City, and a global leader in the palliative care movement. Thank you, Billy, so much for all that you're doing.
Thank you, Diana. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye. Yeah, really important work. I urge you to check that out. Getpalliativecare.org. Getpalliativecare.org. And just very quickly, I announced last week, but I want to announce it again, the Cancer Services Program for Delaware, Otsego, Schoharie, Oneida, Herkimer, and Madison counties. This service is offering free colorectal cancer prevention, a free colorectal cancer prevention webinar on Friday, March 26th. That's this Friday at 2:30 in partnership with the Bassett Healthcare Network, the Cancer Survivors Program, which this is, and Assemblyman Chris Tagg. If you'd like to get more about it, you can go to Bassett, bassett.org/CSP. CSP, that stands for Cancer Services Program. Bassett.org/CSP. And CSP is also offering Its mobile screening coach will be at the Sydney Family Planning Center on Tuesday, March 30th from 9 to 2. If you are a woman 40 or over, you can get no-cost clinical breast exams, pelvic exams, pap tests provided at the clinic with mammograms also provided on the coach. You don't have to have insurance. If you would, you will need an appointment. You can also get colorectal cancer screening tests for men and women. And that, if you'd like to partake in that, call 888-345-0225. That's 888-345-0225. That's the Cancer Services Program. That's the Sydney Family Planning. The mobile screening coach will be at the Sydney Family Planning Center on Tuesday, March 30th. Well, I hope you enjoy this spring week. Thank you for tuning in. I'm Diana Mason, the host of this program that's brought to you by WIOX Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains.
You've been listening to a podcast of Health Cetera in the Catskills. For more podcasts and discussions of important health issues and policies affecting health, go to Health Cetera's website and blog at www.healthmediapolicy.com. That's www.healthmediapolicy.com. This podcast was produced by Dr. Diana Mason and production assistant Kai Volsey.